This week we will be doing Maseches Yevamos, Daf Yud Beis. We left off about 17 or 18 lines down on Yud Beis Amud Aleph. We're discussing a new topic. Our opening Mishnah on Daf Beis discussed that when two women fall to a brother in Yibum, and one of those women, let's say, are Narayos, so not only is there no Yibum or Chalitza by that woman, but even the Tzara, even her co-wife, also has no Yibum or Halitza. So says the Gemara, Amar of Lili Bar Mamal, Amar Marokva, Amar Shmuel, Tsaras Mema'enes Asura. So you have a Mema'enes. What's a Mema'enes? Mema'enes means a Ktana, so she's under the age of Bas Mitzvah. So she has a Kiddushin Derabbanan, meaning her father, or if her father died, her mother, her brother, marries her off. But she has a right to protest and leave that marriage without a get. That's called miyun. So let's say Rachel was a ketana. She was married to Reuven. Leah was also married to Reuven. Reuven dies. So now Rachel and Leah's a gedola, Rachel's a ketana. They both fall to Shimon. So now Rachel decides, after Reuven dies, I want to do miyun. So she does miyun to Shimon. She basically says, I want out. So in that situation, the Gemara is saying that not only does Rachel's chiyuv of Yibum and Chalitza go away, but also Leah's. So says the Gemara, Leman. When we say Asura, the Tzaras Menes Asura, who is the co-wife of the Mema'enes, Asur too? I Lema La'achim. If, let's say there is Levi and Yehuda, there's a bunch of other brothers. So if we say that not only is the Tzara Asur to Shimon, the one that Rachel did the miyun to, but even to Levi and Yehuda, well, that doesn't make sense, because hashtahi gufasharia, meaning Rachel herself, who did miyun to Shimon, she can go do yibum with Levi or Yehuda. Why? To Amar Shmuel, miyun bezeh mutaras bezeh. Just because Rachel did miyun and said, I want out from the relationship of Shimon, she can still go do yibum with Levi or Yehuda. So if that's true by the Mema'enes herself, then Sarasa Mibai, then her co-wife, who didn't even do Mian at all, certainly the co-wife should be Mutter to Levi or Yehuda. So it must be El Lididei. What Rav Lili Bar Mamal was saying was that if Rachel goes and does Mian on Shimon, then Leah now is Usher to Shimon. But there's still a problem here, because Umay Shnom Mema'enes to Sharia La'achim, Dilo Avduhu Maisa. What's the reason? Okay, I understand why Rachel's usher to Shimon, because she basically declared that I want to have nothing to do with you. But why is Rachel permitted to Levi and Yehuda? Because she never did any type of maisa or declaration with respect to them. So if that's the reason why Rachel is permitted to Levi and Yehuda, then that same logic should apply to Leah and Shimon. Because Saranami lo'adu maisa. With respect to Leah and Shimon, just because Rachel did miyun and said she wanted out on Shimon, but Leah never said that. So the same way Rachel is permitted to Levi and Yehuda, Leah should be permitted to Shimon, the Yavam himself. So why is Rav Lili Bar Mamal saying that the Tzaras Mema'enes is Asur to Shimon? At the end of the day, Leah the Tzara didn't do anything. She didn't do a Maisa to Shimon. Why should she be Asur? So the Gemara answers, Gzeira Mishum Tzaras Bito. You're right. There really is technically no problem, but the problem with miyun, if you think about it, is that miyun uproots the marriage retroactively as if they were never married. So, if that being the case, Leah is not even related to, she's not even a co-wife, because it turns out when Rachel does the miyun, that's like she was never married to Reuven, never married to Shimon, nothing. But the problem is that it looks like she was married. The way Rashi puts it, we say, Nisuin Kamai Ka'akra. So it uproots the original marriage, in which case Leah is not even a co-wife with her. But the problem is, over here, how do you have Tzaras Bito, Mema'enes? Meaning, apparently we're saying that you could have a case where Rachel is actually the daughter of Shimon. Well, how do you have miyun and the father's there? Meaning, isn't the whole case where the father's not around? Meaning, I thought we said the case of Miyun was where this girl's an orphan, she doesn't have a father, so her brother or her mother marry her off, and now she can protest. So how do you have a case of a katana falling to her father and then doing Miyun? So Rashi explains, because you could have a case where her father married her off as a katana, and then she gets divorced. In that situation, she has certain independent rights, where now if she gets remarried again as a katana, she can still do Miyun. It's what we call a yesoma b'chaye yavia. She's like an orphan, even though her father's still alive, because when she gets married as a katana and then divorced, she severs that tie, that relationship, at least in terms of the restrictions that the father can place on her, and she's like her own woman, and therefore if she goes and marries someone else, she could do Miyun. So what the Gemara is saying over here is that we're concerned that you would have a case where Rachel and Leah are married to Reuven, and then when Reuven dies, Rachel, who's the daughter of Shimon, falls to Shimon, and now her co-wife, if she does Miyun, so now Leah still can't marry her. Leah still can't marry Shimon. In all other cases, Leah could marry Shimon because the Miyun uproots it. So therefore, we're going to be gozer all cases of a katana and a gdola falling to Shimon where the katana does Miyun just because of a possible case of tsaras bito in ma'enes. Says the Gemara, but tsaras bito in ma'enes, miyasira, is the co-wife of a daughter who falls to her father in Yibam, really Aser? But v'hatanan, let's think back to our opening Mishnah, which said, the kulan, imesu, omiyanu, onizgarshu, tsaroseya mutaros. We said in our Mishnah that if, let's say, Rachel and Leah are married to Reuven, if Rachel, who's, let's say, the erva to Shimon, if, let's say, Rachel does miyun, or let's say she gets divorced, or let's say she dies, if that all happened before Reuven dies, now Leah can go marry Shimon. Why? Because at the time when Reuven died, Leah was not a co-wife with an erva, because the erva now, the relationship was severed from Reuven. So says the Gemara, d'miyun b'man, when our Mishnah says a case of miyunu, where Rachel did miyun, who did she do miyun on? So, ilema demina babal, if she did miyun on Reuven, she was married to Reuven as a katana, and she says, I want out, well, hainu grusha. What's the difference between that and divorce? It's the same, practically. Elalav bi yavam. Rather, our Mishnah must be saying that she did miyun on the yavam, meaning she did miyun on Shimon, and yet, what does our Mishnah say? The tsara of the me'enes is mutter to Shimon. So our Mishnah would seem to be in direct contradiction to Rav Lili Bar Mamal's statement that Tsaras Me'enes is Asura, because our Mishnah seems to imply that Tsaras Me'enes is Mutter. Says the Gemara, no, that's not the case. La'olam Bebal. The case in our Mishnah really is where Rachel did Miyun on Reuven. Meaning it wasn't on Shimon the Yavam, it was on her husband. We asked, well, isn't then Miyun the same thing as divorce? The answer is yes. Utri Gavni Girushin. It's two types of gerushin. One is a gerushin, a divorce de oraisa, which requires a get. And you have when a katana gets divorced, it's through miyun, simply rejecting the marriage without a get. That's gerushin de rabbanon. So the Mishnah felt the need to list both those types of gerushin because they're not exactly the same thing. Says the Gemara, but I still don't get it. Umayshna kimina babal da'krinu l'nisuin. When Rachel says to Reuven, her husband, I want out as a katana, it uproots the marriage as if they were never married. So kimina biyabam nami nisuin kamai ka'akra. So when she does miyun to Shimon and says to Shimon, I want out, well, Shimon is really just stepping in the shoes of his deceased brother. So when Rachel says, I want out, she's essentially saying, I want out of this whole situation. And then it'll turn out retroactively, she was never had any shaykhus to Reuven or Shimon. And if that's the case, then why is Tsaras Me'enes Asura, a quarter of Lili Bar Mamal? Because if the Miyun uproots everything, then it turns out that Leah is not a co-wife of a Me'enes. Because it turns out she was never really married. She never had a Chiyav Yibam. So we're still trying to figure out, according to Lili Bar Mamal, Rav Lili Bar Mamal, why do we say Tsaras Me'enes Asura, the co-wife of Ketana, who does Miyun, is Aser to the Yavam? So the Gemara answers, Mishum Ditani Bar Yecheskel, Tani Rav Chazkel, Mina Babal Muteres La'aviv, B'yavam Astur La'aviv. So we're saying there really is a distinction here. If Rachel is married to Reuben, her husband, and she does Mina on her husband, she could actually marry her previous father-in-law, meaning who's not her father-in-law anymore and never really was retroactively, because she's married to Reuben. So when she's married to Reuben, Reuben's father is her father-in-law. But once she does Mion, she uproots the marriage retroactively. It turns out she's not related to that guy and she can marry him. However, let's say Rachel falls to Shimon in Yibum and then she does Mion to Shimon, she cannot marry Shimon's father. Why? Alma mishas nefila niris kikaloso. Because we view the fact that she had a nefila, she fell beim, she had a zika, a connection to Shimon, we view that as if they're quasi-married, and therefore that looks to an onlooker, Shimon's father looked like her father-in-law. And therefore, for him to go, for Rachel to go and marry Shimon's father, everyone says, wow, she's marrying her father-in-law. And therefore, based on that logic, that's the reason why Rav Lila bar Mamal says it's Tzaras Ma'enes Zasura. Because Hachanami, Mishas Nefila Niris Kitzaras Bito. I mean, let's say the Ma'enes happens to be Shimon's daughter. So, when she does Mion, it's true. It uproots the entire marriage from the beginning, and therefore Leah is not really co-wise with her, but it looks like it. Because at the moment she fell to Shimon and Yibum, she hadn't yet done Mion, and therefore to an onlooker, it appears like Leah is the co-wife of a Bito. And we know from our opening Mishnah that Tzaras Bito is obviously Aser, and therefore the whole logic of Leah bar Mamal as to why it's Tzaras Ma'enes Zasura is essentially what it will look like, Bishas Nefila, it looks like Leah is the co-wife of Tzaras Bito, even though she's really not, and that's the logic of the Yisr. Okay, and that takes care of the sugya of Tzaras Mema'enes. Moving on to another case, which Amar Ravasi, Ravasi says, Tzaras Eilanis Asura. So we know an Eilanis is a girl who doesn't have physical features of a woman in terms of puberty, and she can't have children. And so, if let's say Reuben's married to Rachel and Leah, and one of them, let's say Rachel is an Eilanis, when they fall to Shimon and Yibum after Reuben dies, well, we know Rachel the Eilanis can't do Yibum or Chalitza, and therefore her co-wife also is Pater from Yibum or Chalitza. Now, what's the reason why an Eilanis can't do Yibum or Chalitza? Says the Gemara, Shenemar, v'hayah b'chor asher tilid. The whole purpose of Yibum is for the brother and the wife of the deceased husband to produce a child, which will essentially be mali makom, fill the shoes of the deceased brother. So prala eilanis she'ena yoledes, that comes to exclude an eilanis who can't have children, so that won't be possible. Okay, masa Rav Sheshes, Rav Sheshes Zakasha, shlosha achin nisuin shalosh nashim nachrios. You have three brothers, Reuben, Shimon, and Levi, who are married to three girls, all unrelated. Umes echem mehen. Reuben dies. And now Rachel, who is married to Reuven, falls to Shimon and Levi, and Shimon does Maimer. What's Maimer? Maimer is that the same way when it comes to regular marriage. We have Irisin and Nisuin. You have a Kiddushin stage, you have a Nisuin stage. But Yivam also. Yivam is the final step. That's really what, that's the mitzvah. But a Yavam can do Maimer, which is Kiddushin Derabanan, to sort of set the tone almost like a quasi-Irisin. So if Shimon does Maimer on Rachel, Reuven's wife, Umes, and then Shimon dies, so now what happens? Shimon's wife, let's call her Leah, and Rachel, who was Reuven's wife, both fall to Levi. Hare'elu chotzos v'lo misyavmos. So they both do chalitza and not yibam. Why? Shenemar, because the pasuk says, Umes echad mehen yivam evo aleha. If one of them dies, that one of the brothers die, then now there's a chiyav yibam. But we learn from that, Misha Allah Zikas Yavam Echad. The only time a woman has a Chiyavim Yibam is if she's coming from one husband. The Chiyav of her Yibam stems from being the wife of one particular husband. Velo Zikas Shnei Yivamin. And not from two. And over here, if you think about it, Rachel was married to Reuven. Reuven died. Shimon only did Maimer on Rachel. So the Zika of Reuven was never actually taken care of fully, because Shimon never did Yibam on Rachel, he only did Maimer, Kiddush Nerabanan. So the Zika from Reuven still remains, but she did do Maimer on Shimon, and then Shimon dies. So now, when Rachel falls to Levi, she's falling to him, Mikoach, two brothers. First of all, Reuven, because his Zika was never fully solved, and also Shimon, because Rachel was quasi-married to Shimon as well. And the Pasuk is excluding a case where a woman falls to a man, Mikoach, two different Yevamin. In that case, there's no Chiyav Yibam, and therefore we say both women just do Chalitza. V'ktani Allah, and on that we say, Amar of Yosef, Zuhit Saras Ishesach Me'av, She'isr Nefila Garam La. This would be a case of the co-wife of an Ishesach Me'av, right? The wife, the sister-in-law, essentially. Because the Isser Nefila Garam La, the fact that she fell to Levi Mikoach, two brothers, that's what prevented her from being Chayiv in Yibam. Shlomatzinu B'chol Torah Kula Kigon Zos. Because we don't find anywhere that we have this, that you have a chiyav yibam when you come, mikoach, two brothers. Says the Gemara, zuhi lemute mai. When Rav Yosef says, oh, this is a case of tsaras ishes ach me'av, asher nefila garam la, that must be zu and not something else. So what, only this is asher. What would not be asher? My love, lemute tsaras ailunis desharia. Maybe what is coming to exclude is that if a woman is the co-wife of an islandess, a woman who can't have children, then maybe the tzara is mutter. Says the Gemara, lo, don't make that diuk. Rather, the opposite. Lemutei tzara's islandess da'asira. Rather, it's to tell you that not only is this tzara's ishes ach me'av usher, but also the co-wife of an islandess is also usher. Well, umai zuhi, then what's the distinction? Why say zuhi to exclude that? Says the Gemara, Zuhi de Isser Nefila Garam La, Tsarasa by Chalitza. In the case we mentioned where Rachel falls to Levi Mikoach, the two brothers, so it's her Nefila, the fact that she fell Mikoach to Yevamin, that's what makes her Usser, but she still requires Chalitza because we're not really sure. It's still an Isser de Rabbanan. So just to be safe, we do Chalitza. We generally do Chalitza only in a case where there's a suffix, or we're not sure. This is in contrast to the case of Islandess, where afilu chalitza lo bai, where when it comes to the co-wife of an Islandess, we're not saying, oh, don't do even yes chalitza. Rather, nothing. Why? My time. What's the distinction between Tsaras Islandess and Rachel who falls to Levi Mikoach to Yevamim? The answer is, hada oraisa. The patur of Islandess is a dindo oraisa, and therefore the tzara has nothing to do. However, ha derabbanan, the whole fact, even though we quoted it from a pasuk, it seems to be an asmachta, the fact that Rachel can't fall to Levi, Mikoach, Reuven, and Shimon, that's an issa derabbanan, and like we said before, we have an issa derabbanan, just to be safe, we say du chalitza. Okay. Says the Gemara, Tanan, we said in our opening Mishnah, Dav Beis, the Kuhn and Miso Mionu is Garshu, when every time you have a case, Reuven's married to Rachel. If Rachel dies or does Mion or gets divorced, or she into islandess, or you found her to be an islandess before Reuven dies, then Sarosei Mutaros, then the Tzara of Rachel, let's call her Leah, we mutter us. How could Ravasi tell me that Tzara's islandess is Asura? Our Mishnah seems to say that Tzara's islandess is mutter. So answers the Gemara, Lokasha, Kancha Hikerba, Kancha Lohikerba. When did Ravashi say Tsaras Islandess is Usser? That's when Hikerba, the husband, knew she was an Islandess. Essentially, when the guy marries her, if he knows she has no capability of having children, yet he decides to proceed and marry her anyway, so he's taking that risk. He can't claim I want to divorce her because she's an islandess. Well, if they're full-fledged married, now the co-wife is going to be a tsaras islandess. And therefore, the tsaras islandess is asura. Whereas our Mishnah, which seems to imply that tsaras islandess is mutter, that's talking about a case, shelo hikerba. The husband had no idea. And then 1 week into the marriage, he discovers, she reveals to him, whatever doctor, sends him doctor information, she can't have kids. So in that situation, that's called a mekach tos.
that uproots the marriage l'mafreya retroactively. If the marriage is uprooted retroactively, it turns out this co-wife, Leah, is not actually a co-wife of Rachel. Because it turns out retroactively, Rachel is not actually married because it's a mekach tos. That's the case where the tsaras ilonis is mutter because she's not really a tsara of anyone. And Dekanami, this distinction is very clear. Diktani shenimtzu, because our opening mission on Daf Beis says the case is shenimtzu. He discovers, the husband finds out later that she's an islandist. Fluk tani shahayu. The mission doesn't say that he knew about it or she had these pre-existing conditions that he was aware of. And shma mina, and therefore that supports this distinction that Rav Asi was only talking about a case where it was hikirba and the husband accepted her flaws when they got married, whereas our Mishnah is talking about a case where he had no idea, and therefore when he finds out, it's a mekach taos, and it uproots the relationship retroactively. Good. Amar Rava. Rava says, what's the halacha? Hilchasa, saras ilonis mutaras, that the co-wife of an ilonis is mutar, afil hikerba, afil taras bito ilonis. So basically, in all cases that we would have thought would be no good, are still goods. Even in a case where the husband accepts the fact that she's an islandist, even in a case where she's a tsara of a daughter of one who's falling to Shimon, in all those cases, it's still mutter. What's the logic? So Rashi explains that, and why is this different than the other cases? The answer is because an islandist is very different than the cases in our opening Mishnah. The cases in our opening Mishnah are cases of erva. So there's a makom mitzvah for yibam, and then the erva tells you, okay, fine, no mitzvah. Whereas the case of Ilonis, nothing even gets off the ground. As Rashi says, Kiva de Ilonisi, de Balav Evranami lo chazil Yibam. Meaning she's not even in the parsha of Yibam, the fact that she can't have kids. And therefore, the co-wife of an Ilonis is considered a tsar's erva, shalo bimako mitzvah. The only isser of a tsara is a tsar's erva bimako mitzvah. But here, an islandess, we say, is not even Mamako Mitzvah. She doesn't even fit into the Parsha of Yibam. Mamela, her co-wife, is considered a Tsaras Erva Shelo Mamako Mitzvah. And that's the opinion, or that's the logic of Rava, to say that in all these cases, the Tsaras islandess is still Mutter. Aye, Ve'elohad Tani Shinimtsu. Doesn't really fit with our opening Mishnah, because our opening Mishnah seemed to say, oh, the case is where he didn't know about it. Implication being, if he knew about it, then it would be Aser. Says the Gemara, Tani Shahayu, you have to amend our opening Mishnah to have it read, Shahayu, that he didn't know about it, and still, Mutter. Ki Aser Rabin, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Achas Taras Ma'enes, V'achas Taras Ilonis, V'achas Taras Machzik Rishoso. The three cases we mentioned in the last daf, both the case of the co-wife of a Ma'enes, the co-wife of an Ilonis, and the co-wife of a Machzik Rishoso, Kulon mutaros, they're all mutter. Good. Moving on to the next sugya. Tani Rabbi Kameder Rab Nachman, very well known Gemara, Shalosh Nashim Mishameshos Bemoch. So this is the Iker sugya of birth control. So we say over here, there are three women that can use a birth control. Now, this birth control was something that was a physical thing that a woman would insert into her private area to prevent the zera of the man to enter her body, and we'll see in a second how Rashi and Tosfos understand that. But anyway, there are three women that can use this. Ktana, Mu'uberes, Uminika. And the issue here seems to be that without a special heter, this would be an iser of Hashchasa Zera. Meaning, the man has the active bia, and there was a chance that this could lead to having children. And now the woman's doing something to prevent that by catching the zera, by not allowing the zera to go into her body, and that could be a problem. B'mavatel mitzvah puruvu could be an iser of hashchasa zera. Only three women that could do it. What are the three women? Number one, ktana, a young girl, a muberes, a pregnant woman, and a umenika, a nursing woman. Now, what's the reason for all three? Says the Gemara, ktana, the reason why a ktana could use it is because shema tisave v'shema tamos. Because if a ketana might get pregnant, and if she does, she might die. Because her body is so small that the trauma of a pregnancy and a possible birth would kill her. And therefore, it would be sakana not to use a birth control in that situation. muberes. Why can a pregnant woman use it? Shema tase ubra sandal. Because as Rashi explains, the science of the times felt that even though she's pregnant, having bia during her pregnancy could actually make her pregnant again with a new child, and that new child could somehow push against or affect the health of the child that she was currently pregnant with, and because of that sakana, we would allow her to use birth control. And Minika, a nursing woman, Shema Tigmo Bina Biyamus, because we assume that if she's in the middle of nursing now, she's producing milk, if she gets pregnant, that pregnancy will cause her milk flow to stop, and then that could be a big sakana to her other baby, who's alive, who needs that milk. So V'ezi Uktana, what's the age of Uktana? It's from 12 to 13. That age for a girl. From 11 to 12. If she's under 11, she could have bia, no moch. Why? Because the assumption would be that she's not getting pregnant anyway. It's not physically possible. And above 12, she doesn't have to use a moch, because if she doesn't get pregnant, her body could handle it. It's only in that sweet spot, the age between 11 and 12, that we're concerned that she could physically get pregnant, but if she does, it will probably kill her. That's all Reb Meir's opinion. The Chacham say, Achazu v'achazu, v'shemesh l'kedarka v'olachas, that all these three girls, they are also not allowed to use birth control. They could have be in the normal way. V'shemayim yirachameyu, because Baruch Hu will have mercy on them from Shemayim. V'shem shenemar, Shomer Pesachim Hashem. Hashem protects the fools. So if you do something, you're doing something normal. You're not skydiving. You're just having bia. So even though, you're right, there is these sakana factors, the Chachamim felt that a person's allowed to take the risk, and he doesn't have to be concerned. He could be confident that Hashem will protect him. So what's the issue here? Midika Amar Shema Tisavar Shema Tamus. The fact that we said by a girl between the ages of 11 and 12, she might get pregnant and she might die, michlal dikiktana dimiyavra velomesa. So it's only Shema. That means there's a chance she can get pregnant and not die. You could have an 11-year-old who gets pregnant and actually does give birth. And now we're going to ask our kasha, based on this premise, imkain, if there's really a possibility you could have an 11-year-old girl who gets pregnant and actually gives birth, then matsinu chamoso mema'enes. You could have a case of a mother-in-law who's a ktana, who's doing miyun. Sounds very strange. She's 11 years old and she's a mother-in-law. How is that? V'tnan, and we say in our Mishnah though, yata yachol omer b'chamoso b'im chamoso b'im chamov, shimtu ailenes oshe miyunu. We said that you can't apply the case of miyun to a case of a mother-in-law, because the Mishnah thought, rightfully so, that how could you have a ketana who's a mother-in-law? But now we can have the case. Why? You have a girl, she's 11 years old, and a man's mekadisher, and she has a child, and then another man is mekadish that child, the newborn. So you could have a case where now you have a ketana girl, she's a mother-in-law, as crazy as it sounds, and she could be doing miyun. So how could our Mishnah say that a mother-in-law can never be in the position of being a ketana and doing miyun if apparently, according to Reb Meir in our Gemara, it's possible for an 11-year-old to give birth successfully, and if a man was mekadesh that newborn, it would turn out that she was a mother-in-law who could do miyun. So the Gemara answers, Ema Shema Tisaber Vitamos. You have to take out one of the Shemas. It's not, the Rameer is not saying that she might get pregnant and might die. It's that she might get pregnant. Meaning there are two tzadim. Either the 11-year-old does get pregnant or doesn't get pregnant. But if she does get pregnant, she definitely will die. So you actually will never have a case of an 11-year-old who will be giving birth. Because if she did get pregnant, that pregnancy will kill her. Damarav bar liui, gvul yeshla. There are certain boundaries, there are certain set times. Kodum azman hazeh, eidim hazeh kol ikr. If she's under 11, she cannot physically become pregnant. Toch azman hazeh, hi mesa v'uvar mes. If she's between 11 and 12, if she gets pregnant, her and her fetus will die from that pregnancy. Lachar zman, once she's 12 and older, hi chaya v'uvar chaya. Then her and her child could live and not die. Fine, says the Gemara, Eini, this is really true. Batani Bar Shmuel, Yatiyachum Rachamosim Chamosovim Chamov, Shinimtsu Ilonis Oshimianu Shekfar Yaladu. We added in two words, Shekfar Yaladu. So it sounds like the case of a girl doing Miyun, the reason why you can't have a case of Miyun is because this girl gave birth. So what's the diuk? The Gemara thinks at this point that the Gemara is saying that, well, you can't have a case of a girl doing Miyun if she's given birth. Why? Probably because she's a gedola. Why didn't the Mishnah say, according to this version, oh, shekvar gadlu? Because now she's a gedola, and a gedola can't do Miyun. The fact that we didn't say that implies that if she was a ketana, she could not do Miyun. But why not? We just said, says Rashi, shekvar yaladu, when we did tali time of bevlad, the fact that we're saying, oh, Miyun depends on whether or not she has a kid, michlal de ketanehi, that right now she's a ketana. Dilav ketanehi, lisnei shekvar gadlu. It should have said, she's already a gdola. So the fact that in that case, we're saying that she can't do Miyun, she already had a kid, but she's a ketana. So again, you see the case that she's a ketana, and yet she's given birth. So what are you going to do with that? So elal olam, shematisa berbishema thomas. So you have to say that you're right. It's possible for an 11-year-old to give birth and to survive that birth. Ve'ela kashahach. What was our problem with that? Our problem with that is, if it's really possible for an 11-year-old to give birth, then how can our Mishnah assume that you cannot have a mother-in-law doing Miyun? Yes, you can. An 11-year-old girl who has a child, and then a man's makadish that newborn, she's a mother-in-law, but she's still a ketana, she can still do Miyun. So Amar Rav Safra, it must be we say, Bonim harehim kisimanim. You cannot have an 11-year-old who gave birth, who's also doing Miyun, because we were thinking up until this point that a girl can do Miyun until she's 12, but it's not only true. It's not just about age. It's also about signs of physical maturity. And therefore, even though she's not 12, guess what? She's given birth. And giving birth cuts off her ability to do Miyun. So you really can never have a mother-in-law doing Miyun, because if she's had a child, the very act of having a child, harehim kisimanim, it's the same effect as her turning 12, which is that she's too old for this. She can't do Miyun anymore. The Ista Amri, and some say, banim adifim misimanim, that having a child is actually a stronger proof of puberty than actually going through puberty and showing signs of puberty. So l'may nafkamina, what does that mean? That banim are greater than simanim. What would that mean? The answer is, diafilu Rabbi Yehuda, damar ad shiar ba shachar, according to Rabbi Yehuda, for a girl to be considered a gedola, she would have to not only have two black hairs, but she would have to have a lot of black hairs in private areas to show that she's become a gedola. Even Rabbi Yehuda says she would have to generate a lot of hairs, bibanim moda, would say that she could have no hairs. But if she's had a child, we stamp her as a gedola for these purposes. She cannot do Miyun anymore. For Rav Zvida Amar, turning over to the Gimel Aleph, in banim below simanim. Not that you could have one without the other. We were assuming, according to this past pshat, according to Yehuda, that, oh, really, she doesn't have simanim, but she had a child, that's good enough. Rav Zvid saying, in banim below simanim, that if she had a child, it must be she has simanim. She has certain hairs that are growing that indicate that she's a gedola. Says the Gemara, the nivdok. Why would we assume that? Just because she's had a child, it must be she had the hairs? Let's check. Have a medical exam be done to determine whether she actually has those hairs. Says the Gemara, Chayshinan Shema Nishru, we're concerned that she had the hairs, but those hairs went away. Says the Gemara, Hanicha Lamad Amar Choshin. That would make sense if you really assume that hairs can go away like that. El Lamad Amar In Choshin, Michael Neymar. If we don't assume that women, that hairs go away like that, then why wouldn't we just check her to see if she has those hairs? Even if she's given birth, let's just check. So Gemara answers, Afilu l'manda amar ein choshishin. Even though you say normally hairs don't just go away like that. Mishim tsar leida chayshinan. Remember, this girl is 11 years old. She's given birth. So Rav Zid says, it must be she had hairs since she's given birth. Then why don't we check for the hairs? The answer is, because everyone agrees, even if normally we wouldn't assume hairs would fall out or they would be removed or not grow, in a case where she's gone through a pregnancy and a birth, the traumatic events of the pregnancy and the birth would cause the hairs to fall out. And therefore, if you didn't see any hairs, it's not a proof to anything. Maybe she did have those hairs, but they fell out because of the tsar leida. As we know, anytime a person's stressed, hairs could fall out. And that's why we're not nivdok. Therefore, we can't really check because it could be they fell out. That's where Rav Zid says, the very fact that she had children, it must be she had those hairs, and we just simply make that assumption. Okay, we'll stop there.